This is After the Gridiron, a podcast featuring interviews with retired football players. If you're a fan of After the Gridiron, make sure you subscribe to the show to ensure that you won't miss an episode. Today's episode is sponsored by Symphonies. Symphonies is an online store that provides custom clothing and accessories. They have a number of quality products available at affordable prices. They offer custom, unique, funny, and inspirational products that you won't find anywhere else. So go to www.symphonies.ca to shop for your next purchase. And as a special offer for our listeners, enter promo code GRIDIRON to get 15% off your purchase. So there's no excuse not to check it out. Again, that's www.symphonies.ca. Symphonies. Great products, great prices.
All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of After the Gridiron. I am your host, Lyle Green, and today we have another great guest lined up for you. We have John Bronson. So John played 3 years in the NFL. He played with the Arizona Cardinals. He was an undrafted free agent out of Penn State University, where he played defensive end for his first 3 years there, and then switched to tight end his senior year. So we'll talk about how that transition went for him, how that was. And he also got a degree in journalism while at Penn State, so it wasn't just playing football, but he was in the classroom as well. And now, after football, he started a few different businesses, but now his main business is Finger Licking Dutch. So they make stroop waffles, which is a nice treat from the Netherlands that they make. And his website is Finger Licking Dutch. So if you want to check that out, you can look at Finger Licking Dutch. So, John, thanks so much, and appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, appreciate it. So, I always start off by asking my guests to say something about themselves that most people wouldn't know about them. So what would that be for you? What's something about you that most people don't know about you?
Ah, man, what is that? that's a tough one, man. You know what? Maybe something that's been of recent over this year. I started doing some diving. So I spent a lot of time in the Curacao and the Caribbean. So I got into diving. So, people usually don't, when I say that now, like I said, yeah, no, I'm a certified diver. They don't really expect me to say I'm a certified diver. That. So,
yeah, well, that's pretty cool. So you go, you do that in the Caribbean. You said you traveled there to
go to Caribbean a lot and do a lot of diving. I got into it just as kind of a hobby, something to do. And, you know, we started going to different places and loved it. And, you know, my girlfriend, we end up taking the course and doing all the things, and eventually got our dive certificate, which has been fun. So it's a lot of great underworld that is like just, you know, it's just so different. So if you ever interested in something new, diving, I tell you what, it's a lot though. You have to go through a lot. It's an intensive 2 or 3 days, but on the other side, you really feel good about seeing a whole different way of life and living in the underworld. So I think that alone right there I can start a whole nother conversation about, you know, something different in the underworld, but that's something I don't think people know.
Okay, that'd be cool. That'd be cool. Yeah. To see all the things that are under the waters that no one gets to see really much. So is there a spot that you're looking forward to going or that you've been to that's been, you know, pretty amazing besides the Caribbean?
Yeah, you know, not really. I mean, you know, there's it's really hard. I'm so new at it right now that I wouldn't say like, oh, I want to go to Australia and go to the Great Barrier Reef or something like that. But of course, definitely want to do that. But it hasn't, you know, made my top of the list yet. I just right now I'm still getting my feet wet,
stumbling into it,
diving experience, right? So
Okay, pretty cool. All right, so we'll get started and talk about when you started playing football. When did you start playing?
Yeah, so I started football at a very young age. My it was my uncle who put me in football like many years ago, and I was about 6 or 7 years old. So I'm from Kent, Washington, outside Seattle, Washington. Okay. And so my parents were in the military, and excuse me, my dad was in the military. So, you know, I was born in Hawaii, and I lived in Germany, and lived in, bounced around the United States, but eventually we settled in Seattle, which was a big military base up there. So when I was younger, my parents, my uncle put me into football around my parents. My parents didn't want me to go in football. I thought I would get hurt and things like that. So
lots of parents, but my
uncle, yeah, that's just kind of like the thing, right? And so my uncle was like, nah, well, he has to play. So he took me out to practice one time. I did really well. And then from that moment, I never really left the practice field. And I think my parents, you know, my mom especially, she got on board for me playing football. And, you know, it was just moving from there. So that's how I started way back when I was 6 or 7 years old in the little Pee Wee League, and then did really well and just kept moving up the ladder from there.
Nice. So did you play any other sports as well growing up, or was it?
Yeah, you know, I later in my, actually, let me take that back. In elementary school, also, I also played ran track. So track was my other thing, and then along with football, track and football kind of went hand in hand for me. I didn't play basketball or baseball. I wish I would have played baseball, but I did not. But track was my other sport, especially as I got to high school. You know, I was dual sport athlete in that, and I really also excelled at track and field too. I was the decathlete, so I did it all. I was a 110 high hurdler.
Yeah,
I went to those all state high hurdler, the hurdles, shot put was another one of my big all state and shot put. Was on our 4x1 team, which we were also all state in that. And the 200. I ran the 200. So I love track. If it wasn't football at that point, it would have been track and field.
It'd be track, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I can imagine, yeah. Okay, so talk about Penn State. So you went to Penn State University, and obviously it's a little bit a trek from Penn State to from Kent to Penn State. So
yeah,
talk about getting recruited by them and why you chose Penn State over the other schools.
Yeah, you know, I had a really different high school kind of career or time frame that maybe a lot of kids, you know, went through. Number one, I wasn't the top of the food chain, so to speak, you know, academically. So I had that to battle. And then on top of that, you know, I was also, in some aspects recruited heavily, and in some I wasn't. It wasn't until Penn State actually started recruiting me, did like a lot of other schools really start to heavily recruit me.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, I also had some track scholarships, which I was entertaining at the time too, which was, you know, back east as well. So there's a lot of moving parts on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, my high school years were just, you know, as any other heavy kid, you know, jock, so to speak, like you're playing your sport, you have your academics, and you're kind of going through that motion. So when I had the opportunity to go to Penn State, it was actually on accident. I'll never forget, me and one of my friends, from high school, we were looking for camps to go to that were different. Like, we didn't want to go like to University of Washington again, and like, you know, Washington State camp again.
Yeah.
So we were looking for stuff like back east or down south, and but it had to fit our schedule. So lo and behold, I just did a random search for camps. Penn State came up, worked out in the timing. I never forget, I wanted to go to Kansas, University of Kansas camp at that time, but I could not get off from school. So long story short, we went out to Penn State College, had a really good camp. Both of us, Ryan Scott was the other guy. He went to a rival high school that I did. He played receiver.
Yeah.
And we went out to Penn State and had really good showings, did really well. Before we left, they offered us both college scholarships.
Before you left,
they didn't tell us. They didn't tell us. So they told They told my parents, and my parents, just all they said was, "Hey, we had something for you when you get home," and they were excited, but we had no clue.
Oh, wow.
I ended up finding out a little bit ahead of Ryan. A little bit ahead because Ryan's parents told him first, and then he told me.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, well, if he got a scholarship, maybe I did too. But
yeah.
And so that's how that worked. And then we just kind of went through the process, the recruiting process. And to be honest, you know, we could have went to UW and many schools, other schools in the Pac-10, but, you know, Penn State was just a different school, a different atmosphere. Love the whole like kind of East Coast vibe, but still yeah. tucked away where it's, you know, where it's a very small town feel. So, a lot of opportunities, and not to mention they were just coming off, you know, at the time,
good
which
season.
Was a great year with number one, number two pick, LeVar Arrington and Courtney Brown were number one and number two, same
side
of ball, same defense. So yeah. it was really hard to turn down a Penn State offer, you know, coming out 2000
at that time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're definitely one of the top schools in the football tradition at Penn State. And yeah,
even with other options.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Coming off a great season. Yeah. I can see why you decided to go there for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, it was really, really tough to turn down that offer. You know, with all of those, positive things that you had to look forward to, you know, going to a big time university like that. So,
yeah, definitely. So you mentioned you had some track offers too. Did Penn State allow you to do track while you were there as well?
You know, I could have if I had really pushed the issue for shot put mainly. I did not simply because, you know, for me, I need to get into the groove of college. And then academically, I'll share this, but I was like, academically, it was Penn State was, you know, it's near next to Ivy League as far as the academic requirements.
Qualifications,
qualifications. So going from senior year of high school into freshman year, you know, first off, I had to do more things. I had more classes that I had, more credits or something. That I had to do to get into Penn State, then I needed to get into, let's say, a Washington State.
Other schools.
Like the requirements were
higher.
Just through the roof. Yeah. So way higher. And so, you know, I looked at that and if I would have put something else on my plate with track, my concentration probably wouldn't have been all there. So I just decided to focus mostly on football and my academics, which, end up running its course.
Yeah. Okay. I see. Okay. So talk about your career at Penn State. As I mentioned at the top, you started as a DN. So you got there as a DN and transitioned to tight end your senior year. So talk about how that was and how they approached you in asking you to make that transition.
Yeah. No. It's actually very, very, very funny. Actually, I got recruited to Penn State as a tight end.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. The first day. I ended up going to linebacker. And so, ironically, offline, we talked about Derek Wake or Cameron Wake, as you know him.
Yeah.
And we came in together, and both of us were in the same class, same everything. He actually was, first day, he was DN. He got recruited for DN. I got recruited for tight end. He was DN. I was linebacker. Then I ended up having a minor EC joint injury. He goes to the linebacker.
Yeah.
And when I come back, I end up going to DN. And we end up switching it. So it's funny how things come full circle because obviously later in life, you know, you play with him as a DN, and then, you know, I end up going back to tight end, you know, in the league. So, yeah, so I was all over. But I think, you know, the big moral of the story was, you know, I wanted to be, I was a versatile player and just, you know, the more you can do. And that's what I really kind of was wanting to make sure that I was open to for coaching, so I could never be a person that could come off the field unless, you know, I was injured or something like that. And so, but I enjoyed it all. You know, playing Divas event actually was a ton of fun. I got to play with a lot of great, learn a lot, number one, play a lot of great players. It was big shoes to fill too. Keep in mind, as I mentioned, you know, that 99 team, 2000 team, like they were, you know, kind of stellar with big names, the Courtney Browns and, you know, the Brad Skillies and LeVar Arrington's and, you know, Brandon Shorts. Like, I mean, that defense was packed on that side. And then also coming in, I'm kind of a young pup. There's a lot of other players that were still, turning over. Jimmy Kennedy, Michael Haynes, Anthony Adams are playing as D line. So,
yeah.
By the time sophomore round, which I, my sophomore year, which I finally got penciled in as, like, as a starter, you know, I had a lot to live up to playing against side these seniors that were, you know, already kind of established, and at that point. So, so I got a quick crash course real quick to kind of, you know, to elevate your game at Penn State. And, you know, going to school was a great coach. You know, they, it's very rigid. So like, you know, it's very military style in terms of expectations and how you have to carry yourself on and off the field and, everything academically. Like you couldn't even, you couldn't miss a class without somebody knowing. We had class checkers. So I don't know if you ever had universities, but people would come to the class and they would make sure you're in class. Yeah. And so, and if you miss class, like, you know, you'd have what we called awareness training.
Yeah.
It's awareness training. It's like where you had to do, do some extracurricular running and stuff on a Sunday, like after the game, which is like the worst, right?
After a game, yeah.
After a game. So, but I had the greatest experience, played with a lot of great guys, loved my time at Penn State. You know, I'm still very active as I can be at Penn State today, just as from the sideline perspective as alumni.
Yeah.
And, I tell you what, those years of playing, though, it was some of the greatest years that, and as you know, being an athlete that you can ever have, you know, in the course of your life and how things play out.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. A great experience for sure. All right. So, you mentioned that, we have someone in common, Derek or Cam Wake, someone that I played with and you played with as well. When he was at Penn State, did you see what eventually kind of turned out? Did you see that athletic ability? Did you see his potential to do end up doing?
Without a doubt. I doubt this guy can jump through the roof. I mean, he was a crazy freak athlete.
Yeah.
You know, and that was never in question. It was like, was just at that time. Not sure he gave it 110%. That was the ordeal, and so I'm sure he'll admit that too.
Yeah.
You know, at that time, but yeah, crazy athletic ability. I mean, guy was a freak athlete, jumped to the roof, super fast. Like you know, with 245, 250, wherever he played at the time. You know, 4.4, like 40 something ridiculous vertical. Like
he, oh yeah.
I mean, for Derek in college, we called him Derek Wake. That was his name. So that's why I keep saying Derek, or D Wake as we called him.
Yeah.
And, that guy was just freak. But, so it was no surprise that eventually the light bulb would click on it, eventually just, you know, just do what he do. So, I mean, you know, seeing what the world sees now was, we already knew this back.
You knew it was coming. Early 2000.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's definitely a phenomenal athlete. And, yeah, some of the things he did up here in BC, yeah, just amazing that, we knew that, he wasn't going to stay for long.
Crazy. Just, I mean, there's, you know, I mean, probably one of the top athletes that will ever, you know, be around, like just like a complete body of work. Like, you know what I mean? Just from every angle, like it's just like, this guy is like, you know, it's just how is possible. But so that was definitely no lack of talent there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. So let's talk about your time in the NFL. So, you're undrafted free agent. You had to take the long road to making it to the NFL, but you got there. So talk about, your draft year and if there's any talk of you possibly getting drafted or anything like that? So yeah, talk about making it to the NFL and going to Arizona.
Yeah, sure. So I, yeah, as you said, I was undrafted rookie free agent. So, you know, let me say this too, going into my senior year, I moved to tight end. And the biggest reason why I did that is because Joe Paterno, who's our coach, for those who don't know, he felt that I'd make a better tight end in the league. So here am I, right, going into my senior year, and I have to trust this, what, you know, my head coach
what
is saying.
What he's thinking, yeah.
What he's thinking, right? And I had to believe him, right? He's been around this for many a years, and so I think he felt that I can be my chances were better as a tight end than a D end, and I went with it. But I appreciated that he did that, because you know some coaches may not have
cared enough
reached
to
out in
say
that
something.
Way.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Just yeah. been more, you know, what can you do right this second for the team, and not looked ahead. You know, to a particular player or person. So that's how I even got to make that transition in college. But again, because I was a tight end, a pre tight end, I think they were aware of that. I mean, of course, I was, you know, I had a little rust and I had to shake off, but eventually I could bounce back to becoming an effective tight end.
Yeah.
My senior year, and then going into the training as working out as a tight end. So, that's what I did. I kind of went in as an athlete for tight end first, but then also with the, you know, asterisk on, hey, look, you know, if there was a team that was looking for a DN, I can get a 3-point standstill and, you know, run an edge or, yeah. or whatever. So I was, it was whatever the situation was, whatever opportunity that I was able to have at that time, I was open. I just wanted to make sure that I did everything possible to have the best chance. To get to the next level.
Yeah.
So, as you mentioned, I didn't end up getting drafted. There was talk, you know, on draft day and, that I would maybe go, you know, sixth or seventh round. So it wasn't like I was expecting to go first day, especially having didn't have like this huge, crazy senior year.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of intangibles. My numbers, were great pro day and things like that. I was the second fastest tight end. You know, coming out that year, only the first of some tight end. It was like, you know, 220 pounds, and I was 260.
Yeah.
So I would still say I would be first if I was 220. But
yeah.
anyway, and so I felt good about that. I felt good about I caught the ball well at the combine and things like that. And so all of those things eventually kept me on people's boards, and I eventually became a priority, a free agent, which, you know, I near signed before the draft was over or committed before the draft was over, just because it made most sense to do that. And, so next, you know, then after that, I ended up in Arizona a few days later, and the kind of process started there, the Arizona Cardinals, and they had just, there was a big time tight end. I was just retired. I forgot his name, Freddie something. He was also 85, but he was a big time. He had been a Cardinals signing for many years, and he had just retired.
Yeah.
And so the door was open to be able to compete for a spot, and that's what I came to do. And myself, along with another rookie tight end that came in that same year from Lehigh and Adam Bergen, we both came in, ironically, from Pennsylvania. State of Pennsylvania, and we both made the team rookie year, and you know, kind of ran its course that way. And you know, for me, I think I made the team first in special teams, and then as a third tight end,
yeah,
versus the other way around. So that was the other big thing. I was one to the more you can do. That's kind of the moral to the story, is that, you know, a lot of times, you know, people get sucked into like, not just like a one direction, but sometimes you just have to be versatile and available. And the more you can do, sometimes gets you through a door just as fast as just a set position.
Set skills. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Versatility and availability. Those are the two two big things in pro sports.
Exactly. You know it. You know it. So, yeah. You know, I tell you what, with my time in Arizona, it was a lot of fun. You know, played just shy of 3 years, and but I played a lot of great people. Larry Fitzgerald, still playing. You know, he's still there. But I got, you know, great guy, great player. I mean, it's just, you know, you can't make him any better. Anquan Boldin, obviously, Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
Evan James was the locker mate for a year or so when he came over from the Colts. You know, played guys in college and pros. Got like Brian Johnson, who was a first round to the Cardinals a couple years before, and he was worked out for me too because he could take me on his wing, and you know, I didn't know anybody in Arizona, so you know, he can help out there. And so there's a lot of good guys, and I think the thing about pro sport is, you also know too, is you get a camaraderie of in a different area than you do from college, just other people that you kind of connect with, and unfortunately there's some that you don't ever. So it's like, you know, sometimes it's like an airport because that's just the way the business works, right? You know, it's people in, it's people out, and sometimes you don't connect with some people, and then sometimes you end up connecting with people that you stick with, and that's kind of what happened for me just in my short careers. You know, there's some guys and coaches that you just kind of connect with over the years. And I think that's just as big as anything else with the league is expanding your brand, but like just the relationships that you gain out of the pro sector.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, making connections and using your profile to help you with things that you're going to end up using after football.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about life after football, after transitioning to life after football. You, like I said, you played for 3 years. I'm not sure if you're, I guess most guys are hoping to play for 10 or 20 or as long as you can, but you end up playing for three. Was there a time where you said, you know what, I got to start thinking of the life after football? Is it right when you got in, or was it something that happened after your first year? How did that go?
Yeah, I mean, of course, like right when I got in, I was already kind of thinking, all right, what's this, you know, how long is it going to last? Mostly that was kind of the question in my head, right?
Yeah. Because,
you know, I'm one play away from being on the street. So, so it was always in my head, and I was always trying to understand what's the next move. I didn't have the answer per se, but it definitely was top of mind, and I think my first ever biz I started was in travel and travel biz, and it was just through that was kind of the easiest, and I was able to kind of set up this franchise of a travel agency.
Okay.
You know, as I was still playing, which was fun, and so one because I love travel, but the other side too, you know, it gave me something else to do when outside of football talk, right? And so
yeah.
So that was kind of my first thing. And then, then real estate, you know, came along, and I was sure failures as well as successes. My first real estate deal ever was like, well, what's South like? I didn't have the best luck with it. Simply because I did ask enough questions and I got with the wrong group. So the lesson learned there was basically, you know, be more educated about what you're getting involved with and ask more questions. So that didn't work out, but eventually, you know, years later, and even now, I can always get back to real estate in some aspect, you know, and real estate investment in some aspect. Okay. But the transition from pro to college was more about, pro to life was just kind of about finding yourself and finding exactly like what interests you, what's most important. And so, you know, I always say there was like this for everybody, but for me inclusive, there was like this 2 year called gray area.
Yeah.
Some people it's longer, some people it's shorter. and hopefully the gaps get shorter later on. But where you just, you're not sure. You're not sure if you're going to continue to play. You're still training, but you're not, like, you're training, but you're not training for something. You're waiting for this call that may or may not happen. And with that, you're also spending, spending money on, staying in shape, nutrition and training and all these other particulars come with it, but you're not getting any income in from a sport perspective. So eventually you do have to call it a day, so to speak, just know when to just, call it quit, so to speak.
Yeah.
And move on. And I think that for me, that came, after at least about a year. I had a little small stint in the arena league for a couple of weeks. And I think that really helped to realize that I did not want to play anymore.
Do that.
So that was that. I was like, I mean, after you're going from the NFL and then you're going to not knocking arena or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just different. It's just, you're in a different atmosphere. You're not, your motivation is not the same.
It's not the same. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, went to a few months of that. And then, then after that, the turn of that next year, I think I just, hung it up and started down the entrepreneurial journey of a biz. And that's, for me, that was enough. And, to take the next step in life.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, it can be tough. That transition period where you're kind of in between, where you might be playing, you're waiting for that call, you're still training. However, like you said, you have to, have to have income coming in, and you have to kind of start thinking about life after football. So you got one foot in football, you got one foot in life after football. It can be a tough period for a lot of guys. So I know a lot of guys end up in that area, but you managed to find a way and to come to that point. Like you said, once they got to arena ball, that kind of solidified your decision to move forward and to do life after football. Because once the joy and the love is gone and you don't have that passion to do it, it's definitely time to do something else. So you had those businesses that you started, and now you're doing the finger licking duck. So talk about how you started that. And oh, hello.
Yeah, there we go. I lost you for one second.
Oh, you can hear me? Okay, sorry. You
good now? Now we're good. Yes.
Okay. Okay, so I was saying, you're doing a few businesses, but now you're doing the finger licking duck. So talk about how that started and how that's going so far.
Finger licking duck has been it's been really fun. It's I'll just circle back really fast. Most of my life and biz has been in sports in some aspect, sports network, sports marketing. Did a lot with the NFL. Players Association in Arizona, and a president there for some years, and just sports, some other avenues of sports. And so when the opportunity presented itself and decided to go into Stroke Waffles with my girlfriend Femke, our backstory is that she's from Holland. From the Netherlands. And so where stroopwafels are really famous, and everybody knows the stroopwafels. And so when we started dating some years back, she gave me the stroopwafel in a Dutch package, and I loved them so much. I was like, oh man, we got to find a way to to get these to the States. So we did a lot of homework, a lot of research. She had a lot of connections in Holland. I had a lot of connections in the stateside, so we had kind of that crossover and the relationships that we had built over our lifetimes. And we just decided to create our own brand, our own brand, and locate a producer in Holland, so we get that authentic premium Dutch stroopwafel from Holland, and bring them over to the U.S. So it's been very entertaining, very fun. It's right at the tipping point where now people are starting to know about them, not just through us and a few other brands that's been influential and to help in this effort.
Yeah.
But a lot different from sport, and obviously a lot different from football. So, but it's something that keeps me motivated and interested. That's completely outside of the box where of what people would you know would assume. So,
would expect, yeah,
yeah, so, yeah would expect, yeah.
Talk about what a stir brothel is, so some people might not know. I'm not totally familiar, but yeah, talk about. I understand the waffle part, but yeah, talk about.
Yeah. No, it's a good question. So what a strobe waffle is, it's a caramel waffle cookie. It is, so it's basically made from two thin layers of baked dough with this caramel syrup in the middle. So, so it's a cookie. It's like a caramel waffle cookie. So it's really, it goes great with coffee. So you put it, you know, if you put it on top, you put it on top of your coffee and let the steam from the coffee warm the strobe waffle for
caramel in. Okay,
about
30
seconds.
Yeah.
And it's just a really savory, sweet, but not too sweet, savory snack that can be eaten any time of the day. And that's what's great about it. Like, you can eat it for breakfast. You can eat it for lunch. You can have it for dessert. You know, it's just a really... universal, versatile, like, cookie that can be eaten like any times a day. And that's what people really love about it. So we just recently just came off of our third airing on HSN, the Home Shopping Network.
Okay.
I'm not if you're familiar with them, which has been a ton of fun. We've been able to obviously provide to a lot of customers through HSN, but also, you know, really, help us to get the word out about the strobe waffles, in particular finger licking Dutch strobe waffles, but and have people try something that's unique, that's different, that's, you know, from a different a part of the world, that we make it available to them from Holland. So that's what we get excited about, or happy that we can bring a product, you know, make a product in another part of the world, bring it to the U.S. and it can land at people's, you know, mailboxes and doorsteps. You know, whereas before they would have to go to Holland to get these strobe
waffles,
right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, at least the authentic Dutch ones for sure.
Yeah. Cool. So, is it something they can order online? Do they have to go to the website to? Is that how they can get it?
Yeah. So we have many ways we can order, but the easiest way to order, you can go to fingerlickingdutch.com, which is kind of all spelled out: FINGER. LICKINGDUTCH.com.
Yeah.
And it has a little bit of information about us and also a place where they can order. Or we also have our store locator. If somebody's neighbor near one of our stores or coffee shops that we service on our website, where they can also take a look at as well.
Okay. So you have some in stores as well. You have stores?
Yeah. Over 200 stores nationwide.
Oh, nice.
Location and nationwide and counting, and you know we have a lot of goals going in the 2020. We are also very social, so we're on Instagram and Facebook. So, Finger Licking Dutch, just search Finger Licking Dutch. You know, you can find us somewhere around the social wire.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I'll definitely have those links in the show notes so people can find you guys. So you said you have some locations. Do you have any up in the Washington area?
D.C. or Seattle?
Seattle area.
Oh, yeah. We I can't tell you top of my head, but we do have some more in the downtown area and some coffee shops. And I know some bike shops that we do have in the Washington area. Yeah.
Okay, because I'm closer there, so I'd have to check down and see if I try it out for sure. That'd be cool.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't know that. You know, I don't know if you knew. I'm from Seattle too.
You sure? Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm up in Vancouver, Canada.
Okay,
so not too far.
Okay, so you're still in Vancouver.
Still up here. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, we have some. We have about 10 or so in Seattle. Area. Looks like there's another one that may be close. I don't know where Cooperville is. Is that close to the border there?
No, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But yeah, I'll definitely check the website for locations and see if they're see the closest ones. Okay, cool. All right, so yeah, so let me finish off. We usually finish off by what I call the top of the mountain moment. So kind of looking back on your football journey and all that you've gone through, all the highs and lows, the memorable stories, memorable things that happened. Is there a favorite story, a favorite moment? Is there some words of wisdom for younger players? How would you like to finish off this?
Yeah, so no, I was like, man, you know, I think the biggest words I always try to give to younger athletes is, I kind of maybe already said it. It's just number one is, especially the athlete today. And I say that is, you know, you got to really go after what you want. Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, and I say that because I feel today that a lot of athletes like just kind of have this assumption or, you know, they kind of wait on, you know, so you got to kind of go after what you want. In terms of, and be persistent about it. And so, I mean, you can translate that for sport. You also know we have to do the same thing on the business side of things too. And that just, you know, stay connected with the right people or get connected with the right people, ask more questions, be more, vocal or socialable, not just, you know, excuse me, on like social media, but just, you know, sometimes it's easy just as easy to pick up a phone or to get a question answered or to get advice on something. But yeah, out of all of that, I think the biggest on both sides of the tape, the biggest reason for especially in business for our success has just been through mentorship. The more that you can learn from others who's already doing or done what you're trying to do, the faster it will happen for you with less mistakes.
Yeah.
And that is the number one thing that really drives us today is, I mean, even myself, every time a chance I get, I'm always talking to people who's already where I'm trying to go.
Yeah.
And whatever's, you know, in this case is dealing with, you know, the food industry and, you know, getting through, you know, retail and things like that. So, so that's my message. It's just, you know, get around people that can make you better. There's a statistic that says that, you know, you've probably heard this, you are like the five people you spend the most time with. Time with. So if you look at your circle, you know, you can kind of really understand what you're like as well. And so I say that to you, my younger brother, he's a senior at University of Washington, Huskies. Okay. Football there. So I'm always up in Seattle. Well, obviously the year's over now, but for next year, always up in Seattle again. I tell him the same thing. And so elevate yourself, mentorship. And the last thing is, I also say too, you've heard this one, but this is a true one. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. So
yes,
you know, try to stay around people that can elevate you and help move you to the next level, not just always being the person who has something to say.
Okay, great. Yeah, great words of wisdom. Yeah, find some people around you that are more experience and have gone through the things that you're looking to do. And yeah, like you said, you can learn from others and because they've gone through the things you're trying to get to and they have the history and have made the mistakes that you're trying to avoid. So if you learn from them, you can avoid a lot of heartache and a lot of pain, and a lot of wasted time and wasted money. If you listen and learn from others for sure. So
yeah, I'll say one more thing to this, and I'm reading this, and I follow a lot of Damon John and a bunch of others. You know, good entrepreneurs or great entrepreneurs that is where I'm trying to get to. Right. And one of the things he had just said, and I'm reading one of his books right now. And it said that, like, you know, everybody thinks that they have the next new thing, that, you know, everything is always, it's already been done.
Already been done. Right? Yeah.
You think it's already been done. So if you think about that, everything that there may be just a new way to do it better. There may be, maybe branded better, maybe done better in some aspect, but it's already been done. Yeah. So you don't really have to reinvent the wheel again. All you have to do is just find a way to make it better and get around the people that can help you to do so.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So
definitely. All right. Well, John, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure interviewing you and get to know you and hearing your story. It's been an awesome interview. And again, for those who are looking to get some delicious
strobe waffles.
Yeah. Make sure you go to fingerlickingdutch.com and I'll have the link in the show notes, and I'll have the link to his social media as well. So you can follow them on Twitter and Instagram and find them there and see what they're doing there as well. So John, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, I appreciate it. And happy new year to you.
Oh, thanks. You too, John. Take care.
Thank you for listening to After the Gridiron. If you're a fan of the show, please make sure you subscribe to the show and also leave a rating and review. By doing that, you also help to spread the word about the podcast and assist others in finding the show so more people can enjoy this great content. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, with the links to those being found on the website. Your support is very much appreciated. Also, please visit the resources page on the website for links to our sponsors and affiliates. Their support helps to keep the show running. So go to www.atgridiron.com/resources to check them out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you when we kick off our next episode.